Non-stop on one. Introductions after this. We've had a bit of a spillage. This first is you two, Desire. So hi, and welcome to Radio 1, live from Dublin with you two. We have Bono.
Hello.
We have Edge.
Hi there.
Adam Clayton.
Hello.
And Larry Mullen.
Hello.
Welcome in. Thank you. Actually, we're in your studio, so I shall say thank you for letting us come here. It's a fairly big deal today. For the next half hour, we have the band all to ourselves. Then at 1 o'clock, the rest of the world switches on, and there'll be around 145 million people listening into this radio broadcast. Now, I'm all right with this. I mean, is that alarming you at all?
What about Madagascar?
Yeah, what happened?
I know, couldn't quite reach Madagascar. That's the
Philippines,
problem.
I see. Haven't. Oh, no, actually, the Philippines are with us.
That's great.
We do. We have a little map around here telling us exactly which countries we're going to. So I hereby declare this Pop Mart open. Now, I thought you were going to be the perfect hosts. Like, last night, arrive in Dublin, and I thought we were going to be, like, taken out of the kitchen or something like that. Where were you? Stood up in Dublin.
We were doing B-sides.
Yeah. Were you?
Working, as you know, hardest working band in pop music. Slaving over a hot mixing desk all night. But tonight, Joe,
tonight I'm going back
we'll
to London.
There you go. We'll sort that out, don't worry.
Okay. Do you feel a certain responsibility when you're in Dublin? Do kind of you get all sorts of people phoning you up and saying, hey, we're in Dublin, can you show us a good time?
Yeah.
Yeah? And you don't, you just carry on working?
No, we go out with them, which are the Spice Girls.
Have you had the Spice Girls here?
No, I missed them, that was the thing, that's why I was peeved about that. They met my kids, though.
Did they?
Which was very cool.
They were dead excited.
Mm.
Okay, we're going to talk about... ...well, was in place... Okay, that was I Will Follow, and, things are going so smoothly. I bet when you go out on tour, it's kind of, you know, you have all these things happen to you at the time when you go off air and things kind of don't go wrong, right?
You usually get it right by the last show.
Do you?
Yeah.
You know,
we
can hope by about 5 to 2 and then it'll be all right. So you're well at the moment. You look pretty chilled and happy.
We are good.
Well, you did about 15 minutes ago, you looked chilled and happy.
No, I'm actually quite chilled and happy now. I love to see other people under pressure.
Do you?
And also you're doing very well.
Yes, it's all very enjoyable.
Yeah.
Do you put in an awful lot of rehearsals? How long do you rehearse for for the tour that's coming up?
We're getting in about an hour a day at the moment, and that's quite hard because of all the other stuff that we have to do when you finish a record. Mm. And, you know, because we were 3 months late in our record.
So why was that?
The tour is in the same spot, so we've got to make up that 3 months now. So we're making, you know, all you know, selling our wares and, you know, doing interviews and...
Why was it 3 months late?
We weren't as good as we thought we were. You know, we thought
we'd get careless. We thought that we could do it all in 6 months instead of a year, which is what it normally takes. But
it sounds awful, doesn't it?
Did it just
a year to make a pop record? But actually, if you think about it, we have about 20 tunes, and it works out at about a tune a month to write, record, and mix. You know what I mean? It's not that long. It's a 5-day week.
Oasis knock it out in about a day, don't they?
They do not. We haven't heard from them for a while.
I know, but I think you soon will be. We're sitting. This is your studio, isn't it? This is where you work from.
Yeah and all that you can. As the desk went down there, now you know why it took us a year. It's a high tech place though.
Okay, Edge. There's a whiteboard behind me that has lots of details on. Is this like the mapping out of the gigs that you're going to be doing, the tour?
Well, it's a list.
If you could take us through it a bit.
Well, it's a list of songs, so we can start to try and picture what we're going to try and do on the tour. And
it's a running order.
It's sort of a loose running order. I mean, it's not, to be honest, it's not finished yet. You know, we're just trying to think of, okay, imagine ourselves on stage on the first night. Like, what's the first song we want to play, and try and figure our way through it in our imaginations. And it's sort of hard, you know, to picture it, but that's the best place to start whenever you're doing anything like a tour, is
not
to,
that
to
hard,
start yeah. your imagination. It's not hard.
Bono, is it very difficult to decide which tracks you're going to do when you've got, you know, 11 albums to choose from?
We've never tried to be the sort of jukebox thing, you know. We tried that for a moment in the 80s. We played a set list backwards, and we went out and we learned every song. We thought we'd change it every night, and it wasn't that good, really. So
I couldn't remember the lyrics to half the song. So
constant problem, obviously.
I think we'd like to have 2 or 3 sets for this tour.
An alternator, just kind of switch it around.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But I mean, it's, you know, it's, I mean, you have to get...
I mean, it looks like you've, I mean, you've got quite a lot of the old stuff in there and new stuff. It's like, it is a complete mixture.
Yeah, we're trying to play seven or eight of the new tunes.
Mm.
But we, you know, we like our old tunes too. You know,
okay, so do your fans. We're gonna condense, actually. Is it 19 years into 2 minutes? So this is U2 in two.
U2 mean to me when I was 14, when I was 15, growing up, Bono, young, with his hair tied at the sides along the back in his tight black leather trousers. Really hard rock music, Irish, very proud of them, quite patriotic.
They're more innovative now, aren't they? They seem to come up with new ideas the whole time, which is kind of strange for a pop group.
I think it's great the way they can keep changing, you know.
You two trying to reinvent themselves again.
They're turning into a pop band more than a rock band.
I don't think any of their fans are really liking this stuff anymore.
I don't know, I think they're quite good.
It just seems they've sold out in a bit of a way.
I like the way they've gone. I like the fact that they've moved with the times. I like what they're doing now.
I think they're a good band. I like their latest single, Discotheque.
First, I wasn't sure about it, but it's definitely fantastic. It's growing on me all the time.
Pretty cool, man. Yeah.
I like the new album, but I think Bono is a complete obnoxious so-and-so.
I used to think there was a lot of bullshit about him, but my opinion has changed.
I think I preferred the older stuff.
The Unforgettable Fire was just fantastic.
I like the Joshua Tree, you know, the earlier stuff.
The Joshua Tree came out when I was 13, so it was one of the albums I would have grown up with.
Rattling Home, the Joshua Tree. By far the best.
Rattling Home was pathetic, like.
I like Lemon.
Octone Baby was a good album.
I think it's getting better and better.
The shows are brilliant.
Saw them in the Octone Baby tour, and I have to say, it was the concert of my life.
Crow Park in 1985, trying to get backstage and meet them, because they were my heroes, and I remember trying to faint and being carried over the barrier by one of these big, big bouncers. But anyway, they didn't let me backstage, they just threw us back out the side entrance, and that was my earliest memory of U2.
Okay, so Bono.
I think that was very awkward to interview our families before.
We had to pay them vast amounts of money as well to get them to be answered. Bono, then, obnoxious so-and-so, guilty or guilty as charged?
It's job description, isn't it? I mean, you know what I mean. Nobody, you don't want your singers to be, you know, nice folk, do you? We like to be loved and hated. We like to be around a row, a good argument. I'm just, you know, I guess guilty. You're right.
Okay, the rest of the band. Agree
with that. Well, singers, just about the so-and-so bit.
Just sheer obnoxious, okay. All week long on Radio 1, we were asking people every single day to come up with the best questions, so I've got a series of questions I wanted to put to you. And the first one came from Chris Weston in London, and he asked, if you could afford to shoot a video on the moon, would you do it? If you had the technology, and you could do it. Edge.
I definitely think we would. I think we would, anywhere in space that we could get to would be...
I'd have to build a hotel first.
I'm sorry?
Have to build a hotel first.
Oh, right, that's your own hotel, yeah.
Adam would like to do the moon quite posh.
Swimming pools.
See, Dublin feels a bit like the moon at the moment, this morning anyway.
For what reason?
All these wires that keep falling out, mixing desks that blow up and things like that.
Nothing's going particularly smoothly, is it? The second question came from Richard Adams in Totnes and Devon and concerned the religious references in many of the songs. If you met God, this is dead easy.
If you met God.
Okay, Adam, if you met Bono and could ask him or her to do one thing for you, what would it be?
Goodness, I honestly don't know. That's a fairly heavy question.
Larry, any idea? Larry, what would you... Yeah.
No idea.
Bono?
If I met God?
Yeah. What would you...
Well, he has some explaining to do, but I think I'd have more.
Where did it all go wrong?
Edge, any theories?
I would say, what happened to the extra 2 inches off the length of my legs?
Your legs?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you said legs. Alan
Ivory didn't say anything else.
Alan Ivory in Kent wants to know, when did any of you last go to a supermarket, apart from Kmart when you did the opening the other day? Do you actually go out and shop yourselves, or do you have people doing it for you? Larry? Do you shop?
The last time was in America on the last tour.
What did you buy? Was it clothes shopping?
No, I actually went to a record store in a supermarket. They have supermarkets with record stores and you can buy guns and all sorts
America,
of things.
No,
yeah, it's very strange.
Even records. What sort of music were you buying though? Was it old stuff?
I can't remember exactly what it was, to be honest with you.
Bee Gees, okay. I'm sure.
Well, that's fine and dandy.
1983, and it was Super Quinn. here in Dublin. I used to work in a supermarket.
Did you?
Yeah,
stacking the shelves?
I stacked the shelves, and I went back in 1983, and I'd just been on the Late Late Show, which is a program here that everyone watches, and I got mobbed by a bunch of old ladies and who hit me very hard on the head with their groceries. And I haven't been back since, to be honest.
So 1983, that was the last time you shopped?
That was the last time. I'm not very good at shopping for anything. And,
So now you just have people that do it for you?
No, it's not that.
No, so you don't have to explain yourself. We're actually going to have to...
Harvey Nicks on a Saturday afternoon, that's where it's happening.
Okay, and they close it specially for him. We're going to move on because at 1 o'clock we have the rest of the world waiting to join us, and hopefully all our wires will be uncrossed then and everything will be functioning smoothly. And we'll play a U2 track now. This is Lemon.
Adam Clayton, Larry Mullen, U2, live from Dublin, live from Dublin, the largest international radio broadcast ever. 5 continents, 50 countries, 140 million people, U2, worldwide radio with
Okay, well, I think we'll just carry on regardless. The world not quite ready for us, but I think they will be in about 5 seconds' time. This is Radio 1, and now we will take on the world.
Adam Clayton.
This is Joe Wiley, live from Dublin with you two. We have Edge.
Hi there.
Say hi. We have Larry.
Hey.
We have Adam.
Hi.
How laid back. And we have Bono.
I'm hanging in there.
Just about. And we are broadcasting to a worldwide audience of 145 million people, all 5 continents, 50 countries, from the studios of U2, on the eve of the release of the 11th album, Pop, poised on the brink of a world tour. Welcome back to the promotional merry-go-round. Are you enjoying it so far?
There's nothing like it. 140 million people.
I think you're fantastic.
Are you married?
Sadly, yes.
I am too.
You're like divorced as well, so there you go.
I am too.
So, no, are you, do you feel ready for this? Because you've got thousands more interviews to be doing in the next few months, I guess.
It's great, you know, it's not a bad job to have, and, we've got a great record, so it makes it easier to do, all the stuff that you have to do around it. If it was crap, this would be a nightmare.
It is the first proper U2 album in 3.5 years. You're obviously feeling really confident. Larry, are you dead chuffed with this? I mean, you started the band. You started it. It was your fault.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this album?
Yeah, I'm proud of this record. I'm very happy with it. I'm looking forward to taking it around the world.
I think it's probably Larry and Adam's best U2 record ever. You know, I can say that because I'm not part of the rhythm section, but I think for anyone who likes to dance, it's definitely the U2 record that you can put on and dance to at home. I do.
What a generous man is the Edge.
I'd say Edge, you featured pretty well in this album. You come out of it pretty well too.
Well, as usual, I'm trying as hard as I can to make the guitar sound like something from outer space rather than a straightforward guitar. So sometimes people think what I'm doing is keyboards, which I get a bit upset about. But no, I'm actually pretty happy with how this album turned out from my end as well.
Okay, well, this is the dancey bit in the album then. This is the lead track on there from Pop. This is U2 and Discotheque. Going out to 145 million people around the world. That was Discotheque from the album Pop. And we have Bono here and also Larry just joining us in the studios because he has some things to do. We have Edge and we have Adam Clayton as well. And I just was kind of nosing around your record collection before you arrived here. And there's an awful lot of stuff there. What is it? Chicone Youth, Placebo, Sneaker Pimps, all these different acts. So they kind of influence the sound of you at the moment. What has influenced
everything?
This album?
Everything and anything. That's the whole thing about this record is that we decided that it was for us. It was a chance to just exploit like our record collection, put it through the Mincer, which is the band, and basically allow anything and everything to come through in the music. So when we were trying to think of a name for the album, Pop seemed somewhat kind of appropriate since. Is sort of everything that's out there in the airstream that has caught our interest over the last couple of years that's just been used and reworked back into some U2 material.
He's a politician, isn't he, this Edge?
He's a gentleman.
Do you feel like you're in competition with a lot of these bands that are around? I mean, I remember Bono speaking to you once and you were saying about Oasis, how you considered them to be your biggest competitors in the field of music. It was 4 o'clock in the morning, I have to say. Do you stand by that now?
Well, it was a few years ago, and I love them, I must say. I think they're touched. You know what I mean? I think they're blessed. And
touched, I think, was the more appropriate word.
Do you know what I mean? And I just think they're great. But it's not us versus Oasis. It's all of us versus the Spice Girls.
So the Spice Girls are your biggest rivals at the moment.
That's what I'm. Yeah. In fact,
who's your favourite Spice Girl?
Who's my favourite? They're all my favourites.
But you know, they the guy who mixed Spike mixed this tune,
Discotheque,
that we've just heard, and he also mixed the Spike Girls, and I don't know, I like the way things are getting mixed up, alright. I like the way you can't tell where people are coming from anymore, you know. It's like on the same album you have metal, pop, hip-hop, you know, it's all getting nicely confusing.
Do you all have individual tastes, though? I mean, Larry, you're not a fan of the Spice Girls, or Oasis?
It's not that I'm not a fan, I am a fan. I like the music. It's some of the stuff that goes on around just seems to...
What kind of things?
It's the difference between, you know, making music and having fun doing that and all the other shit that goes on around, all the other stuff that goes on around it, you know. It's like there's the circus.
The promotional thing. But you encourage that on YouTube, surely. Well, maybe probably not you personally.
No, not me personally.
I like the opera. I like the opera myself. I think it, you know, that's part of it, you know, is living at large, and you know, I think that's what pop music's all about. And
so isn't there a lot of conflict within the band then?
Well, that's why Bono's the singer of Larry. If you want to, you know, Larry likes to do his thing and keep his head down, you know. I don't think Larry ever liked the idea of being a pop star, and I think it's great that in the same band you got Bono, who's like, you know, the stage is like a platform shoe. It's like a chance for him to get out there and be noticed. And Larry's back there behind the drum kit, like...
scowling.
You know, some welly. You know, that's what makes the...
Living on the edge for all us chickens.
Could I just ask one more question about Discotheque and the video which had you dressed as the village people? Did it come naturally as to who was which village person, or were you fighting over different roles?
I think my moustache actually was the thing that put me in the Leatherman gear.
Okay,
and
so you...
After that, it was every man for himself.
So, Edge, you were...
I was actually the leather man, because I currently am sporting quite...
it's a wolf tone.
A wolf tone.
It's a tash that really reaches onto your chin. Who were you in the video?
Well, there was a big fight over who was going to be the sailor, but eventually I won.
It just came naturally. And Bono?
I was myself, really. You know, I was...
bearing blood.
Yeah. I was the cop, wasn't I?
You were the policeman. It was the truncheon, I think, that Bono was particularly attracted to.
Yeah, and the pelvic thrust, which... why didn't you really thrust in your face? And Larry?
Well, people sort of thought that maybe I was a little embarrassed or shy. In actual fact, it was just after seeing Edge in the get-up, I was so shocked. I couldn't really get it together at all. I'm still not over it, actually.
It's still in character. It is you two, a worldwide audience. We'll play another track from the album now. This is Do You Feel Loved? Do You Feel Loved? Talking to her well then with Larry and Adam and Edge and Bono. And you've been together for what, 20 years, which is longer than an awful lot of marriages. How did you manage that? How do you do that?
Lots of counselling sessions.
Yeah.
You know, we have these monthly sessions where we get to air all our problems and
is this and talk with Paul McGuinness, who's your manager? Is he kind of a
Paul's
role?
Paul, we have separate sessions with Paul. They're on Tuesdays.
He needs counselling, I should imagine.
15 years in therapy, 5 years playing.
Have there been points in the past, though, where, you know, you nearly didn't make it to this particular point?
Every time we make an album, it feels like our last, you know, or our first, you know, that kind of... Mm-hmm. It's kind of the way we go into it. And, you know, there's no other reason for us to make records unless, you know, they're going to be everything. You know, or, you know, for us, from our point of view, that's the way it is. And we've been spoiled by being put in that position. And I think, you know, if we make a crap record, maybe we'll get, you know, one more chance, or we'll give ourselves one more chance to put it right. But I don't see this as a job for life. You know, I just, as long as we're making great stuff, then we'll keep going. But you got to remember, we were only 15, 16 years old when we started this thing. Mm. So when we talk about 20 years, it's not like, you know, we're still, I don't know, 20, 15 years younger than the Rolling Stones and...
Oh, blimey.
You know, and all those. It's like we're sort of on the mezzanine floor
of that
particular argument. So I don't know. I mean, I just, you know, I only look to the next record. That's really the... from my point of view.
Do you get an incredible downer when you finished like a whole campaign? Because they are like campaigns when you have records out. Is it like, oh my god, it's over now, what do we do? What do you do? How do you cope with that?
Well, you try and not let it become like you know, predictable, like the big album, the big tour, and then the big silence. So we try and break it up and make sure that we're creatively always challenged, whether it's doing soundtrack records like Passengers, or Bono and myself did some music for a stage version of A Clockwork Orange, or Adam and Larry went off and did some work. They did Mission Impossible, whatever.
I was going to ask you what you thought of that, actually.
What Bono and I thought of Mission Impossible?
Yeah.
I thought it was great, because I didn't have to do anything about it, in that there was so much activity around this project that I had no responsibility for and didn't have to worry about. It was a real laugh to see it all happen.
What was that like for you, Adam? The success of it.
Yeah, it was amazing that it did so well. I mean, I think Larry and I went into it in the frame of mind of, you know, it'd be fun to do. It was a tune that was kind of well known, which kind of helped. But the fact that it kind of took off so big was, you know, a real nice thing to have happen and a bit of a surprise.
No, was it more of a buzz hearing that on the radio and people... Yeah, just hearing it on the radio than U2 stuff. Was it different?
It was a bit like Rhythm Section Revenge, you know? So just getting our own back. It was sort of nice to be successful outside, to do something outside U2 and for it to be successful. Yeah, there was a buzz with that, but, I mean, that was a short-lived buzz. The real thing is has been in U2. I don't see a future in that. My future hopefully will be in U2. Hopefully they won't develop a machine to replace me, although I know they're working on it.
It must be very frightening actually being the drummer.
It is a little at the moment, yeah.
So are there any
rabbit in the headlight.
Are there any of the soundtracks for any of you approaching at the moment? Have you got things? I mean, were you working on something yesterday?
Doing soundtrack work is just a chance to like mess, you know. It's like being in a playground. You can just, you know, experiment away to your heart's content. It's no...
That's really what it is. It's an excuse, really, to experiment, you know, and we pick up projects along the way that give us a chance to just try out ideas. And in that sense, it gives us a freedom to do things that we may not have a chance to do in a U2 record as such.
Okay, here's quite a good experiment then. This is Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, and Do Whatever. Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me from U2. And you all seem to really like the music. As we were playing it, you kind of seem to really like your own music. I mean, Adam, you were grooving to that.
I haven't heard it for a while, and we've got to play it soon.
So you're trying to memorise it.
It's so funny. Exactly the same thing was going through my mind. Like, oh, my God, how am I going to do all those different sounds live? You know, live is such a different situation. And
yeah.
You can't really... you know, draw on the same backup technology-wise that you have in the studio. So you've got to simplify and you've got to try and find the essence of the tune and find a new way in to perform it live. So, you know, especially on this new record, so many of the songs have got such extraordinary sound textures and there's just no way we're going to be able to play them as they are on the record. So it's about finding a completely new way to perform them that's going to make sense.
Is this the fault of the producers? I mean, the production team, like Howie B and Flood, they're making your life difficult.
Well, we don't mind it being difficult because we feel like going into the studio that we want to be completely free to follow whatever kind of ideas that come up without worrying about how we're going to do it live. It's like it's a separate forum, separate entity. But at the end of an album, then you actually start to have to really think about it, and that's when you really have to again like rewrite the whole thing almost sometimes to make it work.
Bono, is this the one album that you've enjoyed making more than any others? Was this kind of a very enjoyable experience?
Well, I mean, I think the first album was really good. I enjoyed that, and
You can remember that far back?
I just remember... I just remember the excitement of it, and you know, there's so much to prove, and it was the same on this one, really. I just felt, this is it, you know, it's like, cut the crap, show Willie, you know what I mean? We had to deliver, and we had an amazing team around us.
How did you come about choosing those people?
Well, Flood we've worked with for a long time, going right back to the Joshua Tree, and he did some great work with Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, and Howie B was just, he's just like a light, you know, he's like this light bulb of a man, just comes into the room and just lights it up, and we owe him a lot. He's pretty amazing. Then Steve Osborne, just, you know, they were the cavalry then coming in from London, because at a certain point in the record, we just got lost in it, and which is why it came out a bit later than we first had hoped. We thought we could do it in 6 months. It took us 9 months. And
how do you mean that you actually got lost? Was it just that you couldn't define which were the good tracks, or they weren't sounding very good, or what was the problem?
You just get really greedy. You want everything. And sometimes you just gotta pull back and let it go. And if it wasn't for Flood and the spiky helmet, we'd still be downstairs making the records.
Yeah, we were spoilt for choice on this record in some ways, because we'd spent quite a long time working on material. We ended up with about 35 potential songs, and working through them took us a while. I think when people think, you know, it takes a year to make an album, how can you possibly spend that much time on 12 songs? The truth is, for us, it's normally about 25 songs that we start out with, and the process is really just whittling it down till you feel like you've got the best tunes and you've got them recorded in the best possible way. So
what will happen to those extra tracks then that haven't made it onto this album? Are there plans for another, you know, secret album, or are they good enough to go on another album?
Well, a lot of them are really strong, and it's just really about timing. In a lot of cases, those tracks will turn up on subsequent records. Mm. And I'm sure that at least three or four of the songs we didn't finish for Pop will end up on B-sides or another record.
Doing fine for B-sides then. This is Worldwide Radio with you two. Do you each have favourite tracks from the album? Larry, which is your particular favourite track?
I haven't listened to the album as much. It's like when you finish something like this, it's like being in the trenches, you really don't feel ready to take it all in. But the one track that I always liked, even from its earliest stage, was Playboy Mansion. And even though I haven't listened to it for a while, I love the lyric.
Okay, we're going to be playing that later on at the end of the show.
That's my fave.
Bono, what about your favourite track?
I was in the kitchen, which is a club here in Dublin.
Which you were?
The Propeller Heads were playing, and it was just a big deal for me to hear it on the. So I don't know how somebody got a tune before they should have, but it just came on and surprised me. Mofo. That blew me away. I like that.
That's one track that seems to be blowing away an awful lot of people. I mean, it's very kind of, it's very rock on dance orientation.
It's pretty full on. It's pretty full on, all right. And, you know, I feel like it's my whole life in that tune, and that's pretty sad when your whole life can be summed up in one tune, but there you go.
See, this is where the album has kind of defied what people were expecting. People were expecting it to be very much a dance album.
Record. It's a dense record, but it's not a dance record. The club culture side of it is going to come off in the B-sides and the remixes. You know, there's been some amazing remixes. David Holmes did an incredible thing on Discotheque, and I think Butch Vig and Danny Sabre have got this astonishing turn on Staring at the Sun.
That would be fantastic.
That would be something. My other favourite tune is at the moment is Please. And I think that's going to be extraordinary when we take it out live. I mean, a lot of times when you go out live, you discover the songs. Do you know? That's when you actually find out what they're about or if they have anything to offer.
Okay. We'll play another track, and then I'll get round to the other two and ask you what your favourite tracks
are. What's the track you're going to play?
We're going to play If God Will Send His Angels.
Can I play that for Chili?
You sure can.
It's Howie's baby.
It's for Chili. countries around the world, 145 million people, which is quite a lot, really. This is U2, live from the studios in Dublin. I'm Joe Wiley, and that was If God Will Send His Angels. Bono, if we can turn to you at this point, because the album, I think one of the reviews that I've seen of it just had bleak written across the top. I mean, it does come across as quite a bleak album. I mean, I had to agree with it.
I think it's very up record, and I know, and it certainly starts out like a party record. It might turn mean on you a little bit later, but I think, you know, no one wants, you know, this sort of, I hope they don't want this sort of just sweet, you know, saccharine music. And the best rock and roll or the best pop always has an underbelly to it that's unsettled, and because that's real, you know, that's where everybody lives. And it would be horrible for us to all sit around and write these kind of, you know, silly little love songs.
No, absolutely. Know? I think it's just the amount of references to God and Jesus, and in a kind of a disillusioned way, I mean, just for a change, but in, you know, almost sounding disillusioned or
despairing. Well, you know, it's hard to believe, hard to be a believer when you see the way things are in the world, but I am a believer, and, you know, I like to think there's, you know, there's some force of love or logic in the world, but it's hard to believe. But
what is it that drives you particularly to despair? I mean, you
blame it on Jack Charlton myself.
A lot of people do. But I mean, you live in quite a privileged life.
Yeah, I really do, and I love it. And I'm tell you what, I've had the best few years of my life, and I would really like some of that joy to come across on the record. I don't think I'm a miserable bastard.
No, I think that does come across, but I just think if you read the lyrics, then...
But it's real. It's just, you want to paint a real picture. Yeah, and you know, that's where we live, you know. No matter how privileged you are and how lucky you've been, and you're still walking through the world and seeing what's going on around, and it makes you angry at maybe the fact that there's a lot of people so underprivileged or whatever. And I don't want to be the Bleeding Hearts Club here, but I can't close your eyes to what's going on in the world, but you want to hopefully make a music that tries to transcend that and lift yourself, and if you're lucky, other people out of that. That's what always been the thing with you two, is, you know, to try and I think there's some light in our music.
Yeah, but So there is a kind of an anger at God, is that what comes?
Anger, I just pick up on that, you know, I just pick up at something, you know.
Wake Up Dead Man is quite a...
It's hardcore, but I mean, these are taboo subjects, aren't they, for a rock and roll band. You're just, you know, you're not supposed to talk about things like that, but I'm just, Irish people are a bit like that, you know, it's, you know, religion and politics are the two things you're not supposed to talk about, and that's all we talk about, and sex. And do you know what I mean? That's what we want. We just want everything for our music and the right to talk about anything. And
there almost seems to be an impatience for some kind of second coming in those in your lyrics.
Well,
am I just clutching wildly now?
The Stone Roses are fine.
They're a great band.
And almost lived up to that.
But Bono's getting all the blame for that.
I was just going to open it up on that edge.
Well, actually, that lyric was something that we worked on together, and actually, I think the original idea was mine, so you should blame me for the bleak, doom-ridden angle on that one.
So is that genuinely how you feel?
Well, I think on that day, probably was, but that's the point, is, you know, you write a song, it's how you're feeling that minute, it's not necessarily how you're feeling all the time. And I think what Bono was saying earlier about the best pop always, in amongst the joy, in amongst the sweetness, there's always that undercurrent of realism, whether it's Roy Orbison or whether it's even the Kinks. I was listening to Waterloo Sunset this morning on the way in, and it was a line that I actually hadn't noticed before in it, which was incredible. It says, and when I'm looking at the Waterloo Sunset, I don't need any friends. I just realised that, in fact, it's a very lonely sort of oblique song, but, you know, that's the beauty of great pop. It can actually have more than just the sweet in there, and I think when it does do that, it's at its most powerful.
Larry, are you a believer as well? Is religion very important to you?
Yeah, I am a believer.
But, a believer in what?
Well, I've got my own faith, but it doesn't translate to my lyrics. and I hit things very hard. That's how I express myself.
Adam, do you share the other's faith?
I don't discuss religion and politics with anyone.
Not even on the radio to the rest of the world?
Never.
Can't be persuaded. Have there been times in the band where there's been a certain amount of tension between you all? Like, have you had any major fallouts?
This morning? I mean, you can't work with, you know, such a small bunch of people for such a long time and not have tension and disagreements. But we are, I'm always reluctant to say it because it sounds like such a cliche, but we are actually mates, and that's kind of, we were mates before we formed the band, and that's actually been, I think, for all of us, in fact, more precious than the band. And I think we always will be mates, and that's probably the difference between us and most groups. Most groups get together and it's just business, but
it's a matter of personal hygiene.
Who has the worst personal hygiene?
Blood.
There's also that horrible realization that you're actually not qualified to do anything else.
Do you have an escape route, something that you would go into? Larry, what would you do if you weren't if you weren't the drummer in U2, what would you be?
I perished the thought. I couldn't even hazard a guess what I'd do.
Does it fill you with dread?
Like, no, it doesn't. It's just not something I've thought about. I'd like to think that I'd be involved in music in some way, but it's just that U2 is so much a part of all our lives. It will be I think we will be involved in some way with each other, whether that's in U2 or in something else.
Okay.
Bus conductor, I'd like...
You'd make a good bus conductor,
on the buses,
actually.
I'd like
Reg
that.
Varney.
The Reg Varney of the band. Okay, we're going to play another track from the album now. This is the one that Butch Vig and Danny Saber have remixed, but sadly this isn't that remix.
Sadly me arse. This is great too.
Staring at the Sun. From the album Pop, and that is Staring at the Sun. I think that's my current favourite at the moment. We're going out to 145 million people listening at the moment, and you're sitting there reading reviews and interviews of yourselves. Do reviews still matter, Bono?
Well, this is written by a mate of mine called Neil McCormick, who writes for The Telegraph. So it's always curious when you have these conversations with people, you know, who are your mates, and then you see them written down, you kind of gulp.
But we know where he parks his car, so it better be good.
No, he's great. He's a great writer, always was a smart guy. Went to school with him.
Right.
And it's funny, it was a funny old place, that school.
Had a big effect on you, did it? The shaping of you?
Well, yeah, I mean, whenever it was, I mean, I joined the band the same month as I met Ali, and, you know, a lot of people in that school have done really well. It was a peculiar place for this country because it was non-denominational, it was kind of progressive, free school, and we were kind of let, you know, get away with a lot we wouldn't have got away with in other schools, I think, in Ireland. And it was amazing. We're just like just one of those teenage band things. And here we are.
Could you ever have conceived the way you are now and what's happened to you in this time? were you always aiming this high?
That's the sad and sorry thing to have to admit to you. I mean, Larry started the band, and I think Adam was the first to believe in it, but we all caught up. And at a certain point in time, yeah, I just felt, why not? You know, this is the energy of rock and roll or pop music, is just seeing how far you can take it and believing that you're as good or better than anyone that's out there. Because in the end, it's not just about craft, or it's not just about things like that. It's about a kind of a magic, and there is some kind of magic in when we play together. I mean, we're shit, you know. We play around, we're crap for an hour, and then there's 5 minutes when we're great, and hopefully the tape recorder is on. And we're still, in some ways, non-musicians. And in that sense, we had the kind of philosophy of a punk band, but we never wanted to make that kind of nihilistic music, just it seemed too easy. But that was where we were coming from. If it wasn't for punk rock, we couldn't have existed.
Do you feel like you still are basically a punk band?
No, I mean, I don't. What does punk mean?
Your attitude, isn't it?
Attitude. If punk means believing in yourself, yes. If punk means sort of phony rebellion, you know, and you know, trashing hotel rooms to sell your records, no.
That ain't you.
I just think that that's too easy.
Okay, you're doing the whole Pop Mart tour kicks off pretty soon. That is your latest reinvention. Where did that idea come from? You have to be fairly succinct here.
Whoa, that's a problem.
From whose brain?
We are
did that
Irish.
Come? Yeah. Just try, would you?
I don't know. I mean,
is it kind of like condemnation of a whole kitsch?
No, I mean, we're just trying to make fun about the fact that we're in the marketplace. You know, we're a big band. We sell loads of records, and we're just trying to have fun with that idea. In the end, it's just wrapping paper, because the songs themselves are not so sweet, as we said earlier.
Mm.
And if this show is just a spectacle, then it's not what we want it to be. I'd like it to be a very emotional show, because I think that's what the songs are. And you two shows are, they are an amazing thing. It's more like a kind of World Cup final, you know.
Yeah.
Every night feels like that to me anyway. It's an extraordinary thing.
Do you never get desperate to go and play, like, you know, in a tiny bar and just do something for the music?
We were
instead
crap
of the,
in tiny bars.
So you two work best when there is all the effects and it's like a whole thing.
Our music never had a roof over its head. Even when we were like fifth on the bill, I used to love playing those big places and those fields or stadiums. I thought they were great.
Are there going to be any new characters in this tour?
I don't know. I mean, we've made a career out of our personality crisis. Certainly I have. But I don't know. We haven't figured that out yet. It's the songs tell you what to do, and we'll see.
Okay. We're going to have to finish off now. Thank you very much for being here today and for talking to us. You enjoyed yourselves?
Very much so. It's
okay.
Great.
Any news on the support acts for this tour?
I like the Spice Girls myself.
Okay, right, so we're going for the Spice Girls for the U2 World Tour. And thank you very much. They can be the checkout girls, we thought, when you do the video sometime. That'd be good.
That's a cool idea.
Thank you very much
for
talking
to us.
Well, I'm very expensive, I don't know if you could afford me one. We'll leave with
this.
You
could be the bank manager.
Yeah, I'll do that. This is U2 from the album Pop, and this is the Mighty Fine Playboy Mansion.